Joseph and Mary traveled from Nazareth, their hometown, to Jerusalem in order to do what was customary. They brought Jesus, their firstborn child, so they could dedicate him according to the law in the temple. They offered the customary sacrifice for families that were poor. A pair of turtle doves or two young pigeons. Joseph and Mary probably traveled at great price to do what was customary and expected. But when they entered that space, they encountered the unexpected. Their experience was far from customary. It was far from meager. It was abundant, with the expectations of the people who were gathered there. It was abundant with hope, meaning, purpose, and proclamation. It was abundant with promise. Simeon had been waiting a long time. Somehow, inside himself, he had sensed God's Spirit revealing to him that he would not see death until he had seen the Messiah with his own eyes. The story says that, guided by the Spirit, Simeon came into the temple. And when the parents brought the child Jesus to do for him what was customary, there's that word again, customary, Simeon took him in his arms and praised God, saying, Now, God, you are dismissing your servant in peace, for my eyes have seen your salvation. And he goes on to speak words that proclaim a large-scale vision, a vision that might be completely unexpected, certainly far from customary. You have prepared this in the presence of all peoples, a light for revelation to the Gentiles, the outsiders, and for the glory of your people, Israel. Mary and Joseph must have marveled. I wonder where their minds went in all of this. I wonder if they began to ponder all over again how unexpected this child of theirs truly was. How he would break so many norms of what was customary to bring that hope, meaning, purpose, and proclamation into the world. That he might bring abundant promise into our world. And Anna chimes in too, adding her hopes and expectations in the presence of this child. Anna had also been waiting a long time. In the story, she is named as a prophet. She had been married only 7 years and then lost her husband. Widows were at great disadvantage in those days. And yet she never left the temple. She made a home there. And she worshiped with fasting and prayer. This was her routine. Perhaps what was customary. And yet when hope appears in that space, when hope was carried into that space, it ignited her hopes as well. She too began to praise God and speak about this child to all who were present. The story says that she spoke to those who were looking for the redemption of Jerusalem. This was hope. This was hope on display in a very unexpected way. And yet, hope always comes alive in the midst of expectations. Not necessarily expectations of particular outcomes. We can't often control these. But hope comes alive in expectations of trust, in expectations of love, in expectations that goodness and transformation are real and really possible. Sometimes it takes work to hope. Sometimes it takes waiting. Sometimes it takes daring. Sometimes it takes leaning, even if only just a bit, allowing ourselves to step out in its direction so that hope can find us and move us once again. Sometimes it takes each other. I think about the people who have taught me about hope and who have at times stood beside me in ways that embodied hope. I think about Ben Johnston Crace, one of my most formative and most beloved mentors. Over the years, he and I have had many conversations about hardship and possibility alike. We've talked about the ways that hope and goodness manage to show up, often surprisingly, even in the midst of great pain. These are never simple silver linings, but instead they are the presence of accompaniment, at times even resurrection. The mystery of goodness, we've called it over all these years. The mystery of goodness that shows up surprisingly, despite the losses, trauma, fear, and pain we know. These days, I find myself clinging to that hope, as Ben has been diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. I am just gut-wrenched about this. And yet, I still believe in these convictions we've shared together. They give me hope. I think about Michael Jenkins, one of my favorite professors in seminary who taught me so much. On a number of occasions, he taught us that we live in hope as a community, and that sometimes when we cannot manage to believe in hope, we need others who will believe and hope on our behalf. Especially when we cannot begin to see it for ourselves. I think about student activists at the University of Michigan who inspire and challenge me so much. In the wake of a potential Richard Spencer visit, they are making their voices heard, not only opposing his arrival, though they are, but demanding a better daily campus climate for marginalized students. They're doing all of this because they dare to hope and then dare to create better, more life-giving forms of community. I think about Mary Oliver, a wonderful poet, who wrote this great piece about joy. It's called Don't Hesitate. I think it can also be applied to hope. She says, if you suddenly and unexpectedly feel joy, don't hesitate. Give into it. There are plenty of lives and whole towns destroyed or about to be. We are not wise and not very often kind, and much can never be redeemed. Still, life has some possibility left. Perhaps this is its way of fighting back. That sometimes something happened better than all the riches or power in the world. It could be anything. But very likely, you notice it in the instant when love begins. Anyway, that's often the case. Anyway, whatever it is, don't be afraid of its plenty. Joy is not made to be a crumb. Hope was not made to be a crumb either. But very likely, she says, you notice it the instant when love begins. I think about this community. I think about Northside Presbyterian Church, where love has been around for a long time and yet begins anew all the time. When I think about hope, I know that we need each other. And so on Sunday mornings, often we arrive in this sanctuary in the presence of one another to do what is customary, to do for us what may be routine, to be present in worship, to see one another, to pray, to eat a holy meal, to hear holy words. But maybe, just maybe, God is still about the business of the extraordinary. The extraordinary and unexpected in our midst. Because if we need one another to have hope, we need the proclamations of one another. We need the convictions of one another. In this space, in the presence of one another, we can hear that yes, Jesus Christ has come into the world. God was found in the presence of a baby. God has been made incarnate among us, and that changes things. Goodness and transformation are real and really possible. A whole new life is possible. A life that goes to the margins and enters into kinship with those who have been relegated to them, so that ultimately our circle is wide enough to have no more margins. A life that invites us into a love so rich that hope shows up again and again. A life where Jesus calls us to love the outsiders and find his presence among them. That we notice hope every instant when love begins. So what are our collective proclamations? What convictions have you brought into this space and community today? We need each other's hope. We need each other's visions of goodness and transformation, even if they feel small. Perhaps just a beginning, a spark, a seed. And if we struggle to know them, if we struggle to articulate them, maybe right now we need to receive the hope that others may bring. We need each other. We are doing what may seem customary, but God shows up and does the extraordinary among us. When Jesus grows older, he will say, "Whenever two or three are gathered in my name, there am I in the midst of them." What hope might speak to us today? What hope might he call forth from us today? What visions, what goodness, what transformation? Not only as we head into a new year, but as we prepare ourselves to live a year of customary days. And there, even there, find the presence of God surprisingly among us.